This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, fantastic Thursday. Remember, we got Brandon Weikert about a half hour from now talking Russia, Ukraine, Iran, and Netanyahu stuff. We have Carol Roth next hour, but we have other things we have to discuss, and there are lots of them. Communist lies is on the list. I have a fear about how bad the Democrats are right now. I'll explain what I mean. But first, I want to talk again in a different way about trust, institutional trust, why it really matters and what's happening out there. So I'm going to use this example because people, it can be confusing. What actually is power? What is short-term power? What is lasting long-term power? So let me explain the difference. Let's say I am in charge of the police department. I'm the police chief. Small town, pretty small town. We're in West Virginia. We're in rural West Virginia, and it's a 20-person police department. I take over. I'm the police chief. I am an evil, corrupt human being. Now, I use my position as police chief to fill up my 20-person police department with other evil, corrupt people. And we will deal drugs, we'll commit murders, we'll do whatever with the authority of the police department. In fact, if you, because you're part of my town, if you make me angry, if I decide I want you out of the way, maybe you witnessed me commit a crime, I have the power to gather my men, my guns, and myself, and come out to your home and kill you, arrest you, shoot you, say you're... That's short-term power. I have that. But that's not long-lasting, tangible power. And here's what I mean. If I do that once, twice, 10 times, how many times do me and my officers... How many times do we have to commit a crime or do some kind of horribly corrupt thing until the people of my community decide they no longer trust me, they have declared me to be the enemy, and at some point in time I hop in a car with five of my other cops and we drive out to a home to commit a crime and we get ambushed and murdered by the people of the town? At some point it will happen. These things don't happen without end. Now, why? Why did I end up dying in losing my power? Because I lost the trust of the people. And that is long-term, lasting, institutional power. And that's the most important kind of power. I realize for the individual, you, when I showed up to murder you, none of the long-term stuff matters because you're going to die in the short term. But on a long-term scale, on a 30,000-foot view scale, what matters for the institution, for my police department, the most important thing is that the people trust it and rely on it. If I have that, the police department will have power forever. If I violate that, if I lose that, the people will take their trust away, and my police department, in the end, will be completely powerless at some point in time, no matter how long that takes. Maybe it's 20 years, 30 years, but it will happen. I saw this woman. She is affectionately known on this show as Dr. Witch, but her name is actually Dr. Wen. She used to be in charge of Planned Parenthood. She now is obviously a contributor to CNN. She goes on there to talk about medical things. She goes on there to lie because it's CNN. She was ranting and raving about RFK Jr. in some of the things he's doing. Here's what she said.
This is the reason why we look to guidelines. There are medical organizations that synthesize these data. By the way, we look up to the CDC, or at least throughout history, we have looked up to the CDC, to the FDA, to compile these studies for us and to make recommendations. And this, we have always, throughout history, depended on our federal agencies as the gold standard for expertise.
Really? These federal agencies, we have looked up to them as the gold standard for expertise. Okay. She's actually not wrong about that. We hop in a time machine, you and me. We go back to the year, shoot, not even ancient history, 2015. And you ask Jesse if he believes the things the CDC says. Jesse says, yep, I would tell you absolutely. Maybe not everything at face value, but if the CDC put out a warning, hey, don't travel to Mexico, don't eat this, don't... I'm listening. It's the CDC. So 2015 Jesse did very much trust organizations like the CDC. Now, 2025 Jesse, when the CDC is brought up, scoffs and rolls his eyes. In fact, I'm looking at a headline here. I'll tell you immediately, the fellas put it in front of me. Chris, Jewish producer Chris and producer Corey, they put it in front of me. I read it, and I physically rolled my eyes immediately. You want to know the headline? New Chinese COVID strain spreads to the U.S. Immediately, I went, okay, here we go again. Well, why? It's only been 10 years. I don't know. Maybe we should go back to this little flashback from that same doctor, Dr. Witch, during COVID.
Of course, I strongly believe that indoor masking should be the case, including in really in all schools in this country at this point. But even in schools that don't have masking, parents can still do their part and take matters into their own hands. For example, talk to other parents in your child's class. See if the majority of parents would agree with you to also put masks on their kids. Also, make sure that your child is wearing at least a 3-ply surgical mask, not a cloth face covering, because that helps to protect your child better. Try to get the school to also disclose all positive cases and increase testing. That's something that there's no funding.
Why doesn't anybody trust these gold standard expertise organizations anymore? Because you took down the outdoor basketball hoops. Because you told an entire country of 300 million people to stand 6 feet away from everybody. Because you closed schools. Because you cost people their jobs. Because people had to say goodbye to their parents by Zoom in the hospital. You arrested a paddleboarder in the ocean on camera outside paddleboarding by himself. And you did all this using medical expertise as your shield. And you did it as if that trust would be endless. And now you're finding out it's not. It's finite. You know, we were talking about Harvard earlier in the show. Harvard this and Harvard that and Harvard this. Oh, I know Harvard has had a blast pushing communism into American society, but whether or not Trump stomps them into the ground, in the end, it won't matter. Why? Because you're already leaving.
I think going into this, I think a lot of Americans thought that higher ed needed a nice kick in the rear end. What am I talking about here? Well, why don't we take a look at high confidence in higher education? You go back a decade ago, 57% of Americans had high confidence in higher education. Look at where we are now. That number has plummeted as of last year down to 36%. We're talking about a 36-point drop among Republicans specifically. Get this, 68% of Americans said that higher education was on the wrong track. So it's a question of whether or not people agree with Trump's tactics, but they definitely agree with him on the idea.
Two-thirds of the country, just a little while ago, yesterday, two-thirds of the country, when they heard names like Harvard, Stanford, they thought to themselves, wow, that's pretty cool. Man, you got into Harvard? Whoa! Now, you just heard the numbers. Two-thirds of the country. When you tell them Harvard, you bring it up, they go, oh, here we go. And in the end, Harvard is finding out what we've talked about over and over again. Harvard is finding out what the FBI found out, what the medical establishment has found out, what the media has found out. They're all finding out what Jesse tried to warn everybody about years ago. Trust is necessary, and trust is not in infinite supply. You violate it enough times, people will move on. And from there, you'll discover that the only true power you had, long-lasting power, was the trust they gave you, the legitimacy they gave you. Once they remove it, it's gone and almost impossible to get back. I'm going to expand on that just a little bit more in a second. Hang on.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Thursday. We have Brandon Weicker coming up about 10 minutes from now to do all kinds of foreign policy nerd out things. But right now, we're having another talk about trust. And I want to be totally upfront and honest and crystal clear about this. It's really important that we have institutions we can trust and do trust. I don't celebrate where we are, and you shouldn't either. It's picture a home with bad parents in it, and there's a child in the home. Mom says, hey, I'm going to make you dinner tonight so you don't go hungry. And then mom just gets drunk and passes out on the couch and doesn't make dinner. And the next night, she tells that little girl, I'm going to make you dinner tonight so you don't go hungry. And she gets drunk and passes out on the couch and doesn't make dinner. And this happens over and over and over and over and over again. Well, at some point in time, that child is not going to trust her anymore, not going to believe her anymore. When mom says anything, dinner, what else? Doesn't matter. The trust will be gone. Now, that child, out of its own self-interest, out of his own self-interest, should remove that trust. Because when mom says she'll make dinner, assume she's lying, you got to go fend for yourself. Get your own dinner. The child should remove the trust for his own survival. But on a bigger level, this is a terrible situation. Because a child should have a mother. When she says she'll make dinner, the child knows he'll get dinner. Exact same thing happens with citizens and their institutions. I want you to know that none of this is normal and none of this is okay. You should have a medical establishment you can trust. You don't. And so you shouldn't trust them, but you don't. And that, look, we'll focus on medical because that's what we were talking about, Dr. Witch here. Let me be honest with you about something in my own life. Totally honest with you. Why do I talk so much about natural things now? Natural solutions, natural this. You've heard me rant about Big Pharma. You've heard me rant about the medical establishment. Why? Well, they violated my trust, and now I have to look elsewhere. Now, do you want to know why? Do you want to know the real reason? Well, I mean, I've told you real reasons before, but why is it? Chalk is a great example. Why do I love chalk so much? Well, the way I look at chalk, chalk's natural herbal supplements, obviously. The way I look at chalk is chalk keeps me away from the doctor. That is my goal. And you know what? I hate that. I actually wish I had a medical establishment that I trusted for everything, a doctor I trusted so much, every month, every 2 months, I go check in with the doc. Doc, this is what's going on, this and that. But now, don't have any of that at all. You know what I take. I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every day. I take that not only because it makes me feel better, because I feel like I'm preventing myself from ever having to go to the doctor. I check in with the doctor's office when I want blood work done, and then not at all. Because I have taken my trust away. And I don't celebrate that. I do celebrate chalk and I thank them for it. But that's not what I want. I would like to have chalk and a doctor. Now I just have chalk. Sucks. By the way, do try a stack from chalk. you will be amazed at how you feel. CHOQ.com. Remember, promo code Jesse. Go try it for a few months and see how you feel. But that's not the point of our conversation here. The point is, I want you to have that. I want me to have that. The FBI, another great example. Look, you've got guys, Cash Patel, Dan Bongino, people you know, people we've talked about, people we've celebrated. They're out there talking on the news and talking about this, and they want to do this, and they want to accomplish that, and we're going to... Well, for instance, Dan Bongino went on Fox News this morning and said this.
Yeah, it was a room, and we found stuff, a lot of stuff.
A hidden room.
I wouldn't call it hidden, but hidden from us, at least, and not mentioned to us. And a lot of it's from the Comey era, and we are working our damnedest right now to declassify. And just so you know, because I get the public, I totally understand people saying, well, do it now. The process is not all the information is ours to declassify. Some is other intelligence agencies. It's not. We literally can't do it. Once that gets done and that gets out there and you read some of the stuff we found that, by the way, was not processed through the normal procedure, digitizing it, putting in FBI records. Right. We found it in bags hiding under Jim Comey's FBI.
Quickly,
you're going to be stunned.
The shells.
How can you trust an organization that does things like that? The Federal Bureau of Investigation, troves of information that they socked away in a room to hide it from the new director and deputy director? How do you can't trust an organization like that. It doesn't matter who's in charge of it, who the new director is, who the new deputy director is. To be frank, I think they both have an impossible task. I've told Dan, in case you're wondering, I've told Dan that myself. But don't think I'm just saying it to you. I've told him I don't think he can do what he wants to do. Reform the FBI, fix the FBI. I don't believe it can be done. And not only just because of the poison inside of the building. By the way, why haven't the whistleblowers been brought back? That's a whole other story entirely. Not just because of the poison inside of the building. I don't think you could do it because the public has already left. When was the last time we brought up a public poll? I don't remember the last time it was about the public's view of the FBI. You lost them. Now, it wasn't obviously Cash and Dan that lost them, but the FBI as an organization, gone, completely gone. Elections are another great example. It's really, really important for you and me to live in a country where you can trust elections, that they're honest, that they're on the up and up, that every vote will be counted. 2020, that went away. And it doesn't matter how many Democrats you send to the news to say it was the freest and fairest election ever. All that does now is cement in people's minds that you did something dirty. That's all that does. Now that you've lost that trust, where are we? Puts us in a terrible place as a country, just like the kid whose mom didn't make dinner. All right, we're moving off of that. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm going to talk to Brandon Weikert. I want to know why Donald Trump is upset with Vladimir Putin now vocally. He normally doesn't do that, blast away vocally. I want to know why Trump is upset with Benjamin Netanyahu vocally. Said something today about it. We played it for you earlier. What's going on? Let's talk to Brandon next.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, and I want to know what's going on with this whole Putin, Ukraine, Russia stuff, and why Trump is scolding Benjamin Netanyahu. Basically, I want to know why we're hearing things like this every day.
I can't tell you that, but I'll let you know in about 2 weeks. Within 2 weeks, we're going to find out very soon. We're going to find out whether or not he's tapping us along or not. And if he is, we'll respond a little bit differently, but it'll take about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
He's talking about Putin and Ukraine and whatnot. So let's ask Brandon about that. Joining me now, Brandon Weikert, author of so many books, national security expert, including his book Shadow War about Iran, which I really love. Brandon, okay, let's start in Russia, Ukraine. Obviously, we all know Trump wants to end the whole thing. He's now vocally scolded Putin a couple times. What's happening over there?
Well, I think everybody needs to remember, as fun as it would be to say Putin is a mustache-twirling villain, he is responding, Putin is, to an assassination attempt. Somebody tried to whack him. The Ukrainians are saying that, nope, it wasn't us, but... I suspect what happened was somebody in our intel services thought they had a beat on Putin's helicopter. We know that our intel people have been helping since at least 2023, serving as targeting analysts for the Ukrainians when they were firing these long-range missiles into Russia. We were helping them target so that they'd be more precise. We also know that the intel community has for the last 2 years claimed they know where Putin is at all times and they can take him out whenever they want if it ever came to that. Well, I think that this was not actually Ukraine. They pulled the trigger. But I think this was an assassination attempt against Putin by a rogue element within our intelligence community. And I say that because Trump, he came out on Monday, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and he was scolding Putin, as you noted. But then yesterday he came out and gave a brief statement in which he said, I was just told about an assassination attempt, and maybe that's why Putin is behaving the way he has been. Well, in my opinion, why wasn't Trump, or my question is, why wasn't Trump briefed immediately about this potential assassination attempt? And I think that's the tell. That there was a rogue element going, you know, trying to manipulate things by getting rid of Putin in the middle of this very important negotiation. They don't want negotiations, Jesse. They want war.
Okay, so a couple big fat questions I have from that. One, you said we were helping the Ukrainians with their long-term targeting, including targets inside of Russian territory. Are we still doing that? That's the first question.
Yeah, I would assume so, given the relationship that's been built up between our intelligence services and the Ukrainians. I know that the Ukrainians are not able to effectively, they have the weapons. We gave them the long-range weapons, but they're not very good at these long-range targeting. And the NATO intelligence services, including our intelligence services, have been acting as targeting analysts for them. So I would assume that's still going on, but I believe it's still going on, yes. I know it was going on during the Biden regime, though.
Okay, now that actually leads me to this question. How do you long-range target these things in whatever way you're allowed to tell us? Why are they bad at it and we're good at it? What is this, space satellites? People don't know how this stuff works. How's it work?
Yeah, it's mostly our space surveillance capability is really, I wrote a whole book on this. It's called Winning Space. Our space surveillance capability is light years, if you'll pardon the pun, the dad joke, is light years beyond what a country like Ukraine has. It's actually probably light years beyond what any other country, except maybe China's catching up to us. Even Russia, which has an impressive space capability as well, it doesn't come close to our surveillance capacity. So I believe that's why we were being used for targeting assistance.
Why is our surveillance capacity so much better than every other country? Does this just come down to money and volume? We have enough money to put more satellites up there than anyone else does? Is that what it is?
That's part of it. And remember, there was a gap after the Cold War. The Russians were kind of cut off at their knees for a period of time. And we were kind of the only show and tell when it came to space. And so that gave us a lot of ability to kind of get a lead on the rest of the world. Of course, as an aside, those surveillance systems, while they're essential for us, they're also very easy to take out with anti-satellite weapons, which is what China and Russia have been developing for the last 15 years, very effective capabilities to render us deaf, dumb, and blind in space. But until that happens, we still have the lead with these surveillance and communication capabilities.
Okay, so when it comes to Russia-Ukraine, why don't we just leave? Can we just leave if that's what Donald Trump wants to do? I realize he's trying to broker a deal and be a peacemaker, and I actually applaud all that. That's great. But if at some point in time he gets frustrated, Putin doesn't want to end it, Zelensky doesn't want to end it, Donald Trump is the president. Can he not say, hey, CIA, military, everybody, pack up your things. We're going home.
Well, so this is basically my inaugural piece at the American Conservative was published 2 days ago, and it was exactly about this, that Donald Trump's going to walk away from Ukraine. And there's no doubt in my mind that whatever whatever, you know, he's angry at Putin, he's not angry at Putin, you know, it's different every day, and it's part of the kind of the Trump show, you know, he's got to put on the show, like, yeah, he's holding Putin to the fire. But ultimately, Trump, bottom line, wants to get a better working relationship with Russia. He rightly recognizes that Russia is a much more integral player geopolitically than Ukraine will ever be. And so he is going to go do the negotiation show for a little bit. He knows he's got a losing hand. He's going to eventually drop Ukraine like a hot potato, tell the Europeans, tag, you're it, don't include us anymore. Then he's going to pivot and try to do direct deals with the Russians on a coterie of other more important issues, ranging from rare earth mineral development in Russia to Putin a few weeks ago posited that Elon Musk and him are talking about doing a joint American-Russian manned program to Mars in the next year or two. That's something they're wanting to try maybe doing together, Russia and SpaceX. So, you know, we're moving beyond Ukraine. I think you're right. I think that Trump will ultimately just drop Ukraine and tag, you're it, Europe.
Yeah, I'm right a lot. Chris is used to that around here. What, Chris? What? It's just Brandon and I talking. Don't get involved. Okay, so not to get too sidetracked, I swear I'm going to get to Iran and Netanyahu in a moment, but where does China come into play there? Because I know Russia and China have been getting, I know they're competitors in a lot of ways, but they've been getting closer in recent years, almost out of necessity for both those countries as other parts of the world are cutting them off. If we start getting more friendly with Russia, where does that leave China?
Well, that would technically, you would think it would leave them in the odd man out position. And I think that's what Trump and his people around him, the ones that know what's going on, I think that that's the hope. That's the ambition, is to over time divorce Russia and China from each other by favoring Russia over China. This is what Nixon did in reverse during the Cold War, and it ended up actually setting the table that allowed for Reagan to ultimately defeat the communists, the Soviet Union, without firing a shot. Whether that's possible, it's a little bit different now. I don't know, but I do think at the very least we can nudge Russia away from its total commitment to China. Ultimately, Russia is aware, they're keenly aware, that China views them as a junior partner. And I can assure you that Vladimir Putin does not view himself as a junior partner to anybody. And at some point, he's not going to want to be treated that way, either certainly publicly or even behind, you know, closed doors. Eventually, the limits to that supposedly limitless friendship he has with Xi will be tested, especially as Trump offers a lot of, you know, tasty carrots. You know, come work with us instead. We're still a much better market than is China. And I think that Putin is looking for a better deal. We just got to be willing to offer him it.
Yeah, limitless friends are hard to come by. Okay, Brandon, can you stay and just answer a couple more questions about Trump and Netanyahu? Just
sure.
Real quick. Okay, we will be right back with more Brandon Weichert. Before we come back with more Brandon Weichert, I want to remind you that tonight might be the night you lose all your family pictures. All those home videos. Think about that drawer you have with all the home videos, the family vacation, the wedding. Tonight might be the night that goes bye-bye. One flood, one fire, one little wire that's wrong. It's going haywire in your attic right now, and that wedding album is gone. Doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. You can digitize all those things with Legacy Box. They'll send them all back to you. They'll send you a box. You put them in a box. You send it to Legacy Box, an American company. You send it to Tennessee. It's not some big machine. They will hand digitize your stuff, send it all back, and then fire, flood, time, nothing will destroy those memories. Sound like a plan? You want a nice deal on it? Go to legacybox.com/Jesse for an exclusive offer. Legacybox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Thursday, reminding you that tomorrow's Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. You need to get your questions emailed in now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We are back with Brandon Weikert, national security expert. You need to go buy his books and you'll learn a lot more than you will in school. Okay, Brandon, Donald Trump is famously close with Israel. As you and I have talked about this before, we've talked about it on the air before. This is as vocal as I've ever heard him separate from them when it comes to Iran. He's talking about Netanyahu. He told him to back off. He told him, what's going on here? What does Trump want out of this deal?
Well, what Trump is trying to do is he's trying to get to see. This is not even, he's just trying to see if it's possible to get a real reliable deal with Iran that secures not only the peace, but our security. By extension, by the way, the security of our allies in the region, not just Israel, but it includes Israel as well, but also the Arab states as well, who are also threatened by a nuclearizing Iran. But he can't do that if Iran is blowing up the place or threatening to blow up the place. Israel. If Israel's threatening to blow up the place, which Israel is threatening to do. And so, you know, Trump has asked politely Netanyahu, you know, just keep your powder dry. Let's just see where the negotiations go. And after that, we'll reassess. But Netanyahu cannot do that. And I think this is partly because Netanyahu is politically, his survival is on the line. Let's face it. He missed key indicators and warnings as prime minister of the impending Hamas attack on 10/7. He knows that at some point, the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, and Israeli security is going to do an after-action, a thorough after-action report, and eventually he will be blamed on some level, because the buck ultimately stops with him, he will be blamed for those failures on that day, and he likely will lose his political future. Furthermore, he was under all these criminal investigations before 10/7, and all that sort of evaporated into the ether when he became a wartime prime minister. And this is why I think, on some level, cynically, he's opened up multiple fronts against these different countries, saying it's part of the 10/7 response. But really, I think it was because he was just trying to double down to prevent the ultimate reckoning that he was going to have to face for mistakes he made as prime minister. So some of this is self-interest on his part. But ultimately, he is not interested in seeing the Trump administration even try to negotiate. We don't know if this is going to work out. I'm skeptical because of how the Iranian regime is. But at the same time, Trump is probably the greatest deal maker in history. So why don't we let the man work and see what happens, before we just write it off? There's absolutely no reason to rush into what will be another regional war that could trigger a third world war in the Middle East.
Brandon, you mentioned October 7th, and I have many friends in Israel and outside of it who, when we have discussions about it, they have a lot of questions about that day. Not necessarily accusations, but there are people who want to understand how it's possible, maybe the most capable intelligence network on the planet, given its size, Israel's, how you could miss a 1,000-person raid with paragliders into your country. Without being King Cynic Jesse, how's that possible?
Well, the sort of non-conspiratorial answer is they got complacent. And we know that the Israelis, when it came to Hamas, not necessarily Hezbollah, which Israel's always taken more seriously, and they should, because it's a more comprehensive threat. But when it came to Hamas, particularly under Netanyahu, there was the policy, they nicknamed it mowing the grass, which is basically every so often the Israelis would come in and sort of knock out a handful of targets in the Gaza Strip and sort of keep the Hamas threat under wraps. What people didn't realize is under the table, the Israeli government, Netanyahu's government, was quietly paying off Hamas to basically not attack, to keep things quiet as best as possible so that Netanyahu could have a kind of clear playing field at home in Israel. But what nobody seemed to realize is that they thought they were buying loyalty from these Hamas leaders, or at least buying their cooperation. In fact, those Hamas leaders, who are committed to the destruction of Israel were taking that money and using it to rebuild their war machine that we saw come on display on 10/7. On some level, the Israeli military, the Israeli intelligence services were both complacent about the threat from Hamas, and they were very arrogant. They didn't actually think Hamas was the real threat. They thought Hezbollah, they thought Iran. They didn't think Hamas was significant of a threat. They were proven wrong, and I think you saw that. There's obviously more conspiratorial things, stand down orders, for instance, and why wasn't Netanyahu more on this given the size of the attack, et cetera, et cetera. I will leave that to, you know, a different day to talk about, but I certainly have theories on that. But basically, I do think a key component of this was complacency plus arrogance about the Hamas threat on the part of the Israeli security services. There's also a chance, given what we know about what was going on with Netanyahu's legal issues, you know, the same kind of lawfare used against Donald Trump last year was used against Netanyahu by the Israeli version of the FBI, the Shin Bet. There is a chance that they did brief Netanyahu fully on the threat, and he didn't take action because he wasn't briefed fully, and it might have been part of a kind of a deep state conspiracy to make Netanyahu complacent so that they could then pin this on him down the line and get him out, because we know the Israeli deep state does not like Netanyahu.
Well, glad to see we're not the only ones with these problems. He is Brandon Weikert. Thank you, my friend, as always, for giving us a bit of your time and wisdom again today. Come back soon. Appreciate you very much. Foreign policy is a complicated affair, isn't it? That's why we always talk about that. It's so complicated. Different motivations, different divisions inside of the country. You're trying to strike a deal, but there's divisions inside of that country, but you're not also working with a different country. It's just foreign policy is complicated. As I've always said, with the exception of chicken hawks, I have open ears for all of it. I'll listen to any of it. I want you to have open ears when I talk to you about your dog and when he dies. Why do all these dogs get cancer and die? My dog, Hank, died of cancer. Terrible thing. Dogs over 10, 50% of them die of cancer. How's that possible? Well, dogs never get nutrition. We give them dog food. Brown, dead dog food. It's just empty calorie garbage. Sprinkle Rough Greens on your dog's food. How much longer would you live if you had vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and omega oils introduced into your diet versus not having it at all? Well, your dog's the same way. Living, breathing thing. That's why we give it to Fred, useless as he is. You want a free jumpstart trial bag? 833-33-MY-DOG. See if your dog likes it. Or you can go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We still have an entire hour. Let's discuss the GOP trying to win back Elon Musk. Next.